This is Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast with the best in Magic the Gathering. Thanks to GatheringMagic.com, where you can find this show and some of the best articles in Magic, along with Cool Stuff, Inc. My guest, Cedric Phillips.
Cedric, after returning back to Magic, done articles now for Star City Games, along with Star City Games Live. What did it feel like to come back to writing articles again?
For me, writing articles is... it's something I love and it's something I hate. And the reason that I love it is just because one thing that I find in life to be incredibly fascinating is how you can capture someone's attention with the power of the pen, be it a book, be it an article, what have you. I've always found the ability to do that to be incredibly interesting. I'm someone who reads a lot of sports stuff, so I'm a huge sports guy. So for me, Bill Simmons is like a huge person in my life, and I love the way that he writes and just the way that he can always keep my attention and get me running to his column, you know, whenever it is updated. It's like one of the first things I do when I find out. So for me, you know, that's part of the reason I love writing, is just to be able to have that power to, you know, influence and entertain someone through the power of writing. The part that I hate about it is that it's kind of time-consuming. For me, it takes, you know, a lot of people... For some people, it varies, right? Like, for some people who write articles, it doesn't take very long. You know, for Pat Chapin, he writes these long-winded, really, really good articles. And, you know, for me to write an article that is really long-winded to get my point across, you know, it takes me 7 or 8 hours. The article I read about sponsorships, the sponsorship article exemptions, it took me 9 hours to write that article. I just started from, you know, 9 o'clock p.m. one Tuesday, and I just went until I looked up at the clock, and it was like 6 a.m. I'm like, God, I got to get this done. Like, how is this taking so long? So for me, you know, that's the part of it that's difficult for me, just because I enjoy writing as long as I have something to say, but actually sitting down and putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard and just staying there and doing it, that's a little more difficult.
Under your Facebook profile, you have lots of quotes, including one from Sean Ecker, a positive motivation person. How much has his work influenced you as a writer and a player?
Yeah, that kind of positive reinforcement, a positive attitude is something that is important for me in life. It's pretty easy to be negative, and I'm certainly guilty of it. I definitely go through phases of being positive, being negative. You know, I have these internal quirks with myself where, you know, and this happens a ton in sports and a ton of Magic, you know, where I'll just be sitting down maybe in a bar or something, and people will be talking about, you know, sports or whatever, and they're just saying, you know, well, you know, this player's really good, or that player's really bad, or, you know, that was a good player, that was a bad player. And, you know, they don't know as much about that topic as I do. So for me, like, in my head, I'm just going, shut up, you have no idea what you're talking about. And so it's super, super easy to just be negative. But, you know, that kind of positive reinforcement, positive energy is something that's important in life, because you're not really going to get very far with, like, just being super negative and having negative energy, that sort of thing. And so, you know, I just turned everything around, really, after I quit my advertising job and just wanted to be a more positive person.
Do you feel your popularity on SCG Live Broadcasting has to do with the fact that your style is unique based on the fact that you have a heavy sports influence on the broadcast?
That's a good question, honestly. I don't know if it affects my popularity so much as I think it just more so affects the broadcast. And then, you know, the way I'm able to communicate to people over the broadcast, they're either going to like the way that I do it and like the way that I don't. I don't know if, I mean, in a backwards sort of way, it does affect my popularity. But again, you know, I've been watching sports all day, every day, since I was like 6 or 7 years old. You know, my dad brought me up on basketball, baseball, and football. And, you know, I used to get so into it, I would keep basketball box scores. I would watch a game, get a sheet of notebook paper, you know, draw a grid and put every player's name to it. And how you look at box scores for basketball, I would just keep that myself because I found it interesting. So I've been listening to that kind of commentary for, I'm 26, so, I mean, you can safely say 20 years of my life, so it's all that I really know. And as a result, I feel like that's the only way that things should be done. And so a lot of, you know, Magic players aren't really huge sports fans, so they don't really understand that. They don't understand, like, the way, the angle that I'm coming from when I do my commentary. But for me, it's all I know.
You just talked about statistics in sports and how much it's affected you as a person. How much do you think statistics and numbers in Magic affect how well you play?
More than people realize. Myself, personally, the way that I play Magic, there is some statistics, that come into it. For me, honestly, and I've told a lot of people this, I'm more of a person that plays on intuition. I get myself in situations that I'm comfortable in. I play decks that I'm comfortable in, comfortable with. And then, you know, I feel like I play them well. That's part of the reason you don't see me play blue decks very often with your ponders and your brainstorms and stuff like that, because it just doesn't, it's not something I'm used to. Very uncomfortable doing it. And with those sort of decks, you know, you're kind of playing statistics. One deck that I did play statistics with quite a bit, and I actually broke down the math on it a lot, was Dredge, back when I played a lot in Extended. Just as far as how many lands are left in my deck, what are the percentage, what are the, you know, percentage chances of me drawing a land, or what am I going to flip over with Hedron Crab, stuff like that. I was testing the deck so much that I actually just put pen to paper and broke down the statistics for that. Myself, personally, I'm not that big of a math guy. You know, I it's just not one of my strong suits. But I know that there are some people that are, and so, you know, they took the game from that approach. There are a lot of different ways that you can approach Magic, which is part of the reason it's such a great game.
How much fun was it working with OSEP doing SCG Live?
A lot of fun. A lot of fun, actually. I have this quirk about me, as you guys are going to realize. I have a lot of quirks about me. Where, you know, I have this thing where when I'm going somewhere with someone, and I'm doing it just myself and one other person. Let's say I'm going on a PTQ road trip, and it's like, hey, like, you want to go to this PTQ? Yes, it's just me and that person in the car. For whatever reason, I think it's just going to be like an awkward situation where we'll have something to talk about for like a little bit, and then I'll just be like, okay, like, that's it then. All right, like, let's get to the PTQ. And this happening with my best friend now in Seattle, Stephen Berkeley. I was like, man, we're going to drive to Portland, and, you know, like, we're pretty good friends, but, you know, maybe the conversation will get boring. And that just didn't happen at all. We just had a great conversation to and from on a three-hour drive. I was scared that situation was going to happen with OSIP, because OSIP is a little bit older than me. He's from a previous generation of Magic. So I was like, man, we're going to be in the hotel room, and, like, when we're going to talk about how to do, like, the show, and then I don't know what we're going to talk about. It's going to be weird. And I don't know why I thought that, because OSIP was one of the most, like, outspoken people in Magic. So we just talked for hours and hours and hours, and it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. He was a blast to work with. He was nervous, because he didn't want to slip up and say anything, you know, poor. But with a lot of things, Rob, that people don't understand is that incident happened 9 years ago, and he's a lot different person, as anyone would be, from 9 years in the past.
It seemed like with OSEP, as things went along, you let him get in control of where he needed to with his coverage. How is it that you know how to do that with someone in the booth?
Yeah, I mean, it's with the commentary, especially when you have someone like OSEP in the booth, and I do this with a lot of people, you have to understand where you are in the pecking order for commentary. Realistically, as much as people may or may not like me, if you're tuning into a broadcast and it's Cedric Phillips and OSEP Lobanovich, you want to hear what OSEP has to say. You know, that's just the reality of it. And I'm not going to act like I don't know that. So, you know, OSEP has more success than me. He's won a Pro Tour. He's top 8 at 3s, top 8 at 4 or 5 Grand Prix, and won one. Versus I have one Pro Tour top 8 and 2 GP top 8s. I mean, if someone's going to break down a game and provide analysis on what they should do, who are you going to listen to, me or him? I'd rather listen to him. So, you know, I let him go. And the cool thing was is at the beginning, the first couple of rounds of the Standard Tournament, you know, he was trying to find his rhythm about, you know, where to interject and what to say and how to explain things. But you could tell, you know, once we got in the back half of day one and all throughout day two, he got comfortable. And, you know, once you find that comfort, when you're in the booth, you can really do some positive things for people that are watching at home. I thought he did a fantastic job as we got farther and farther into the tournament.
Speaking of someone you have a great relationship with, Patrick Sullivan.
Absolutely.
What is it about Patrick Sullivan that works so well with you?
You know, again, this is another interesting, just an interesting relationship in Magic because, again, much like OSA, Patrick is from a different generation of Magic for me. You know, I'm 26. Patrick, I believe, is either 30 or 31. So, you know, he was grinding much earlier than I was, coming from Jersey and playing out the only game in town. And, you know, I'm kind of this new kid on the block, and I can't even remember the first time I met him. Honestly, you know, obviously I know who he is because I follow a lot of Magic history. And, you know, we run into each other, and, you know, there are some things that we have some similarities in that we like, obviously, Magic and card games and sports and all this stuff. And, you know, I didn't think that we would become this good of friends, honestly. It's kind of strange to me. But, you know, we have a good connection in the booth for whatever reason. You know, one thing that Patrick is incredible at is breaking down a game state. He knows the right words to use. He knows how to break it down for people to understand. He knows what's important, and this comes from him just designing games and dealing with games his entire life. Whereas, you know, I kind of trip over my words a little bit when I'm doing that and don't really know the best way to go about explaining it, he does a fantastic job at that. And, you know, as long as you let him do that, it's going to work really, really well. Now, obviously, you know, we have our fun and our jabs at each other in the booth. And, you know, some people think that the things that we come up with are just planned or whatever, and they're just not at all. I don't even know where we get this stuff from, but that's what makes it so much fun to do. That's just one of the best parts of working with him and doing the job.
One of the great things about working in an SCG Live booth is the fact that you can have those moments that when you go off camera, that you can just look at somebody and go, wow, we just got that, or that really was something special. Have you had moments like that in the booth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I have those moments with Pat. I had that I had a couple of moments like that with OSIP last weekend when we were in Dallas. You know, the thing is, for this job, you know, a lot of people who do broadcasting or commentary, they go to school for that sort of thing. And, you know, my training for that is watching 20 years of basketball and baseball and football. So, you know, it's stuff that's, you know, kind of all foreign to us. And we're learning it as we go about the things we can do and can't do and say and can't say. And it's always just a new challenge. But that's what makes it so much fun, because we understand that, like, you know, our viewership is increasing every single tournament. People are enjoying the product that we're putting forward, which is the most important thing for, you know, for the people that are doing the production and in the booth. The thing you have to realize is that it's not about us in the booth. You know, we're just two guys that are covering matches. The show is what's in front of the people. You know, I don't want people to think they have to tune in to a Star City Games Live because, oh, man, Sed and Pat are doing it. You know, if you guys enjoy what we do, that's fine. But the show that's being put forward is for, the you know, people at home and what's going on in the games that are being played. We just happen to be doing it.
That's a true statement.
Do you believe the combination of people in the booth can affect viewership as far as how many people will actually watch the event versus other coverage options out there?
No, I don't disagree with that at all. And that the thing is, you know, obviously there's Wizards of the Coast who put on coverage for the Grand Prix and the Pro Tours and stuff like that. And you know, our goal, or at least my goal, is to just have the best Magic coverage on the internet. You know, if you're going to tune in to watch something, if you want to watch Magic for the weekend, you know, I want you guys tuning in to us because we, you know, myself personally, I work really hard at it. I, you know, do a lot of prep work for each tournament that I go to, which is, you know, 2 a month now. It seems like I don't even get a break anymore. But, you know, I do a lot of prep work as far as the decks are concerned, you know, how matchups go, what's in sideboards, who the players are in the area, because it's my job and I treat it as such. You know, if you're going to pay me to do this, I want to do the best job that I can possibly do. And it doesn't hurt that it lets me see the world and that it's a lot of fun.
Let's talk a little bit about Game State, the audio-video podcast that comes out on Mondays, where the four of you break down Magic first. Where did the concept of Game State come from?
StarCraft. StarCraft 2. There's a podcast called State of the Game, and it just so happens that Game State is a Magic term. So we decided to name the show, kind of flip it and name it that. And that's basically where we got the concept from. You know, it's a talking head show, similar to Around the Horn if you're an ESPN guy. But the difference is that you guys can actually tune in and watch it and actually interact with us. And we do interact with the chat. Now, you know, if you're not home on Monday when we do the recording, you can, of course, download it off of iTunes or go to our blog and watch that stuff. But we think that it's pretty cool that every Monday, you know, we are the first show to go over the results of what happened the previous weekend. Because the longer that you let those results linger, the faster someone can break it down before you. So we want to have the results as soon as they're hot off the presses on Monday, think about them a little bit and see what we thought about it. And, you know, it doesn't matter if we're right or we're wrong as long as we have an opinion about it. And we get to interact with people in the chat, and it's a lot of fun. You know, that show is something I love doing, and I'm hoping that it picks up a lot more because I think it does – I think it does an important thing for the game, which is just getting people talking. You know, I think more Magic media is a good thing.
How did you and Glenn Jones become part of Game State? Glenn is a fountain of knowledge and fits in very well with the show, along with your personality. Explain how this all came together.
So originally, it was Adam Ragsdale and Stephen Flavel's show, my other two co-hosts. And one day last year, I think they needed a fill-in. They asked me if I wanted to do it. And I said, sure. And, you know, I did an episode. I was like, yeah, this is pretty fun. And, you know, people are watching. And, you know, we're talking about Magic, which is something I know way too much about. And I was enjoying myself. And then, you know, the fourth person was Jarvis Yu. And, you know, I kind of realized right away after doing a couple of shows, I'm like, all right, like, this is a pretty real thing. Like, I think people would enjoy this. And I think that this does, you know, a positive thing for the game. Again, just talking about Magic. And Jarvis is kind of, he has like a full-time job and stuff. And, you know, he's like, I don't know if I can make it every Monday. Maybe we can sub me in. Maybe we can sub me out, what have you. And, you know, I basically was willing to commit my Mondays to doing this. From the time that we do it, I was like, you know, I want to do this every Monday. I'm not going to miss a show. I'll base my flights around getting home in time to make sure we can do this. And I kind of want that commitment from everybody else, or, you know, or you guys can just, you know, have someone fill in for me and do it instead. So I was looking for that kind of strong commitment, and that's unfortunately one that Jarvis couldn't provide. So we needed to find somebody to replace Jarvis with, and, you know, I had done a show with Glenn for SCG Live, and, I mean, you put it pretty well. Glenn is a fountain of knowledge, and he is a lot smarter than I think people understand. He's very, very well spoken. His analysis is very good in breaking down situations. And every time that I talk with him or do a show with him or do commentary with him in the booth, I'm always pleasantly surprised about how he carries himself. He's a very, very smart guy. And I thought immediately of him to be the person to jump in and do it. And after doing a show with him, Adam and Steven agreed. And we just kind of went from there, and we've been doing it ever since.
How is it that with your streaming, you get so many people to watch your stream and be involved with it, and you get some rather large names involved in there too? People like Drew Levin and Adam Prozac and other very good professional Magic players. What is the secret to your success with this?
Honestly, I think the reason behind that is because I look at it as more as a form of entertainment than anything else. You know, I could very easily, you know, sit there, say nothing, have no music on, and just focus to play the best Magic I possibly can. But that wouldn't be entertaining. And truth be told, if you want to see someone playing the best Magic they possibly can, you wouldn't come to me to watch that. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty good at Magic or whatever. I have my accomplishments that you can find. But, you know, if it's me versus a Brian Kibler or, you know, a Luis Scott Vargas or, you know, any of the bigger name pros in the world, it doesn't matter how well I play. You're just going to watch them because they're better than I am and they have more accomplishments than me. So for me, you know, I want it to be an entertaining experience. You know, I've got music going. You know, I'm playing a different deck almost every day or at least every week. And, you know, I consider myself, oddly enough, the guinea pig. For a lot of people, where a lot of people are wondering, man, I just saw like this new modern deck. Is this that good? And it's just like, oh, all right, let's fire it up and let's find out. You know, I could very easily just sit there and play Jund all day, every day, and try to win packs. But I mean, who's enjoying that, right? That's not really all that fun. I'm going to win a lot more than I'm going to lose. That's definitely true. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm putting on a form of entertainment, which I like being and I like doing. And, you know, I want people to be able to come home from work. You know, I start at 4 p.m. Pacific time, so 7 o'clock Eastern. You know, come home from work, and, you know, if they want to throw me on in the background while, you know, they're relaxing from their day at work or, you know, after dinner or what have you, I like to think that I provide that form of entertainment for people. And, you know, truthfully, it's one thing that people don't realize is I could care less if I lost every single match that I play on stream. As long as you guys are being at home entertained and are learning something, then I feel like I'm getting my job done. And I think that thus far, people have enjoyed it. And, you know, I interact with the chat as much as I possibly can. It's kind of hard once you start breaking over 1,000 people for a show to get to everybody. But, I mean, people are enjoying it. People are being entertained and people are learning stuff. And that's all I care about.
Because you're so interactive with the people that you're streaming with while you're online, do you feel that taking their suggestions when it comes to things like sideboarding has helped or hurt the way you play Magic online?
I mean, it can help and it can hurt, right? Like, you know, someone can suggest a play or suggest, you know, a sideboarding plan or something, and they can just be horribly, horribly off base and incorrect. And then, you know, I'll take their plan and I'll do it and it'll just be wrong and I'll lose. On the flip side of things, I can take their play and they could be right and I could learn something new. You know, sometimes I take someone's plan that I know is wrong and do it, and then, you know, they need to see vision. I could easily just sit there and tell them that's incorrect and just say nothing else. Address them very quickly and move on. But they won't know why it's incorrect. Whereas, you know, I can address their plan. Maybe, you know, try something that I'm pretty sure is not going to work. And then, you know, do that plan and then see it not work. And they just go, oh, okay, that's why that plan is wrong. You know, it would be easier in a sense of I could not have, you know, the chat on screen or the chat up at all and just play Magic. But again, I don't think that that's very entertaining. I don't think that's very fun. And I think that by having, you know, the advice advice to the people on the stream and, you know, trying to address some people's advice of why this is good, why this is bad, that sort of thing. I think it makes for a much more interactive and enjoyable experience for people at home.
When you qualified for this last Pro Tour, you were willing to stream online your deck. How difficult was it for you to make that decision to show everybody what you were playing on the Pro Tour?
Truthfully, not at all, which is kind of surprising. You know, I have this theory in Magic, and I've proven it true to myself enough times that I believe it, which is it doesn't matter if people have information. What matters is how they use that information, and I feel like a lot of people will use information that's given to them incorrectly, or they won't break it down enough so they can process it in a manner that is in a positive fashion. You know, there I've gone to multiple tournaments where people know what I'm playing, they know my exact 75, and it doesn't matter. And, you know, I'm not trying to spit in the face of the competition of the Pro Tour, but all things being realistic, I know what's going to happen for me coming into a Pro Tour when I qualify. One, you know, I'm going to ask people to be on their team, they're going to say no. Two, I'm not going to break the format. You know, I don't think that way. I'm not much of an innovator as far as decks are concerned. I'm not going to take something out of thin air and design your Eggs deck or your Storms deck or anything like that. It's just not how my mind works. You know, I'm going to take a deck that's pretty well established and make it better and, you know, refine it and, you know, clean up the sideboard and clean up some of the main deck spots and clean up the mana base. I do that sort of thing well. So, you know, I'm not going to be the guy at Pro Tour Returner rather than going to come up with the innovative deck and take the tournament by storm. That's just not who I am. You know, I'm going to take the deck that's really good, like Jund or an Iapod or a Malaria Pod or what have you, and make it much better and fit it to how I play Magic and then have some success with it. That's what I do. So, you know, streaming for the Pro Tour, you know, was it scary? Was it daunting? Absolutely not. If anything, it really influenced the way that people built their decks moving forward. And I thought that was the interesting part of it. And as you saw, Channel Fireball just ended up playing a Jund deck that was very close to mine. You know, they had Deathrite Shaman, I didn't. And then, you know, my team of Michael Jacob and I played against three members of Channel Fireball on their Jund deck, and we went 3-0 against their Jund deck. So everyone's talking about how we missed Deathrite Shaman, and when we were playing the games, you know, I played against Martin Yuza, and I know that Mike played against Ben Stark, and we were just like, these guys have Deathrite Shaman, and it's not even good. You know, like, David Ochoa top-8ed, very happy about that, obviously, because I love David. And, you know, these guys had their success. Mike cashed a tournament. I didn't. You know, that's Magic. That happens. But, you know, people are just like, man, you guys missed Deathrite Shaman. And we're just like, if we had come across Deathrite Shaman, I don't think we would even want it in our deck. So, you know, their deck list was very close to ours. And, you know, we had an influence on them. And a lot of people were preparing for the tournament. And I think it was a cool experience and one that I would love to do again, provided I qualified for another Pro Tour.
You had a Magic moment, literally, when it came to GP San Antonio. I was watching your stream, and you were short from going. And you talked about, well, we appreciate all the donations, and we'll save up, and we'll go to the next event. And then all of a sudden, your donation bar went away, and someone had fulfilled that number to make you go to GP San Antonio. What was that moment like for you?
For San Antonio, another quirk about me that I told people during that stream is when there is a Magic Grand Prix happening and I'm not doing something for the weekend, I feel like I am wasting the weekend. As far as, if I'm just going to sit at home and watch the tournament or whatever, I feel like, man, like, why aren't I at that tournament? Did I do everything I could possibly do to get to that tournament to give myself a chance to, you know, put up a good finish and qualify and see my friends? It really bothers me. And it bothers me a lot until the tournament begins, and then I finally come to terms with it. But up until that last minute until the tournament begins, and we're talking like Friday at midnight, I'm looking at flights and going, well, maybe I could fly in at, maybe if I leave Seattle at like 6 a.m., and then, you know, there's connecting here, and then, you know, I can get a hold of the TO, and maybe they'll, you know, hold the tournament, or I have two buys, and I can make it. You know, it's just completely ridiculous. So for San Antonio, I was like, man, I really want to go to this tournament. And, you know, the thing that really hit home with me is that there were some people who donated to get me to San Antonio, but I didn't make the donation bar, didn't make it all the way there. So for me, I was like, man, I don't, you know, some of these people may have donated to me to go to San Antonio just because they want to see me there. You know, it might be people in the area, and then, you know, I don't want to, you know, have their money and not go to that tournament. That doesn't feel right to me. So, you know, there was a Thursday, I was like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to try and see if, you know, I'm going to stream for however long it takes and see if, you know, people want to donate and help me get there. So I was streaming or whatever, and, you know, then, you know, I'm getting a couple donations here and there, which is really cool. And then, you know, there's someone who donates me just the $200 I need to get there. And I'm just blown away. And the guy, the person who donated to me, he's just like, well, you know, like, it's pretty clear, like, you want to go to this tournament, and, you know, you've been preparing it for a little while, and, you know, not having enough money shouldn't hold you back. And so he just gave it to me, and, you know, doesn't want, you know, anything in response to, you know, some people that donate to me, you know, I'll give him a shout out or, you know, mod status in my chat, whatever. And he's just like, yeah, I don't need any of that. He's just like, just go have fun at the tournament and hopefully you win. And, you know, that part of it is why I really like what I do, and why I enjoy it, because as short-sighted and as immature as this community can be sometimes, there are other times where the community can be really, really good, and that's the kind of thing that I'm trying to harness as far as the many different, you know, things with Magic Media that I'm doing. You know, it's not even about that guy donating me. It's like, oh, man, I got $200. I really like this guy because he gave me $200. That's the only reason I like him. You know, it's not about that. It's just about the growth of the community and just, like, you know, people are, you know, willing to do those sort of things for their friends or people that they don't even really know. Just because they enjoy the kind of work that I put forward and the kind of entertainment I provide, and they can see how hard I'm trying to, you know, kind of change things in Magic. So that moment was pretty, it was pretty surreal, honestly. That's the best way to describe it.
That was a very special moment in Magic for you. With moments like that, what else do you think Magic can give you?
You know, truthfully, the things that I want from Magic moving forward is, you know, I want better coverage for our game. I want these events, you know, these Grand Prix, these Pro Tours, I want them to be very similar to your League of Legends or your StarCraft type events that people watch on Twitch.tv as well. You know, I went to PAX, which is a gaming convention here in Seattle, and I went to the League of Legends thing. And, you know, I don't even play League of Legends. I used to play, you know, Dota 2, or Dota, when I was in college. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, I come to this tournament, and I see, you know, at least 1,000 people there, maybe more than that, in this hall. And, you know, they're watching these teams play, and they've got these screens up, and, you know, these people are going absolutely crazy. It's like I'm at a sporting event. And they're having the time of their lives, and, you know, they're seeing all these big stars who they watch stream playing League of Legends, or, you know, even you can do that for StarCraft tournaments too. And the thing that really blows my mind, Rob, is when people say, you know, that's too hard to do, or, you know, that's not something people might be interested in, and, you know, that's just, you know, that's unrealistic. And you know, my counterargument to them is, you know, we just put a Land Rover on the moon. You know, we're getting closer to curing cancer every day. You know, there are so many things that are taking place in our world, and you're telling me that we can't have a public pro tour for people to come watch? We can't put forward good coverage? We can't get hand cams so that people can watch at home? And I'm seeing some of the most incredible things around me take place. I'm seeing a game in League of Legends and a game in StarCraft II who they captured their audience on like no other. And I think that we have the best card game in the world. And that's the reason you see poker pros like Dave Williams come back and play this game. We have the best card game in the world. And you're telling me that some things can't be done? I don't buy it. So that's what I want out of Magic. It would be great if I top-8 another pro tour. That would be fantastic. But, you know, I've top-8ed my one. You know, I've top-8ed a couple Grand Prix as far as winning tournaments anymore. If it happens, it happens. But we have the best game in the world, and we don't treat it like we do. And that part of it really frustrates me.
What other ideas do you have in order to make something where Magic is more interactive like that, where there are more people at the event live watching this game that we love?
The point is that you can think of a way for it that it can be done. There is some way that it can be done as far as, you know, having areas for feature matches. You know, I thought to myself of something like this. You know, we're in a convention center, okay? You have four feature matches in the four corners of the room, okay? And maybe these guys sit in soundproof boxes, and they have their table they can play at, and there's a judge in there. And above this soundproof box, there's a TV. There's a large TV. And it has the coverage of what's going on the TV. And people can just walk by, or there's some chairs set up, and they can just look at the TV and watch the match. Because it is kind of hard to crowd around the people But, you know, they can look up at the TV, and if they don't like that food trench, they can go to one of the other four. And, you know, the two players get in the box. You know, there's a judge there to make sure everything's kosher. And then people can just, you know, after they're done with their match, or if they're there just to spectate, can actually just look at the TV and sit down and spectate it. You know, maybe that one's not feasible because of budget. But there is a way that it can be done, because we're watching these things around us evolve between other computer games and esports or other sporting events. There's a way to do it. Do I know the best way to do it as far as a budgetary and equipment way and the most feasible way? I don't. I wish I did. But it can be done. And if they want it to be done, it will be done. My belief is that they don't want it to be done.
What in your mind can Star City Games do to take the coverage to the next level?
To take Star City Games coverage to the next level, what is the next step? You know, they've already done such a nice job as far as locations and you know, getting out, you know, as much as they possibly can to different places. You know, getting things up to the next level is it might be going to different places in the world instead of just the United States. I know that they've run some Star City Invitational qualifiers in Europe, because we had some people at the Star City Games Envy that was in Los Angeles make the trip over from Europe to play in the tournament. So, you know, that could be a move that they make. You know, the thing about the Star City Games tournaments is that they're growing every single time. You know, in Columbus at the beginning of the year, that tournament had 700 over, I think it was either right around 700 or over it, people that are playing. One thing that, you know, they need to do, in my opinion, is just increase awareness that it exists. I was at the Dallas tournament doing coverage with OSIP, and someone came up to me, you know, on the back end of day two, and he's like, you know, what are you guys doing over there? And I'm just like, what do you mean? He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, we're broadcasting the tournament, so you can watch it at home. He's like, you can watch this tournament at home? I'm like, yeah. You know, you can just go to StarCityGames.com, you can watch the tournament. He's like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, and I think that's one thing that needs to happen, is just increase awareness that this sort of thing exists, because, you know, this is the future of where this game is going. You know, I feel like we're a little bit behind, but this is where things are going to go. And, you know, either you're going to get on board or you're not. And I think that, you know, we should have a larger viewing audience from people at home who are just hanging out on the weekend. And I think the tournaments are going to grow, too. So I think that's the next step, just increasing attendance. And probably, you know, eventually I think we'll go overseas.
I would like to thank Cedric Phillips for being on the show, along with our sponsors, GatheringMagic.com and Cool Stuff, Inc. And again, thank you for listening.